Indie Media is DIY News. It is about people reporting their own news directly, without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media. There are now almost 100 Indie Media websites or IMCs worldwide, providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns, and protests. The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests that shut down the World Trade Organization summit. Uncensored and unsponsored, indie media sites can be updated literally anytime, anywhere, and by anyone. The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from those global websites and the UK's very own indie media site. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Hi!
Hello!
We're back again. It's All Girls Show today.
Coming up on the show today, we have news from all over the world. It's pretty much international stories.
Absolutely.
All the way today.
Mm.
And are we ready to rock and roll?
We are.
Of course we are.
Yay. Well, it's been a scorcher over the last few days, with high temperatures seen in London and across the country. Recently, the usually staid UN World Meteorological Organization made a remarkable announcement that ascribed recent extreme weather events to climate change. They cited record June temperatures of over 40 degrees C in the south of France, a record number of tornadoes in the US, and pre-monsoon heatwaves in India that were up to 5 degrees higher than average, as evidence of our rapidly changing weather. For more information on climate change and related issues, see www.risingtide.org.uk.
More from them later. But now, from Italy, the 20th of July will mark the second anniversary of the murder of Carlo Giuliani by the Carabinieri, that's the Italian paramilitary police force, during the protests against the G8 summit of Genoa 2001. In those remarkable days where Berlusconi's government gave orders to stop protesters by whatever force necessary, the Independent Media Centre was brutally attacked by police, resulting with the arrests, tortures and assaults and beatings into a coma of many protesters. The Tutte Bianche, one of the main Italian groups participating in the Genoa mobilisations, decided to give up their white overalls after Genoa's brutal police repression, as their strategy of using the integrity of their bodies as a means of resistance was rendered useless in this escalation of violence. Meanwhile, the criminal proceedings referring to events in Genoa still continue.
The parents of Carlo Giuliani are now calling for people from all over to come to Genoa once more for the 20th of July. In a statement, they said, "We would be happy if you participate at the different initiatives from the 12th till the 20th of July, starting with the meeting of the citizens' councils, which have defended the memory for over 2 years against a backdrop of secrecy and impunity. We invite you to an exhibition which documents the events and legal scandals, not only in pictures. There will be new film material and new books. In the Modena Theatre, plays are offered for people to see. Many associations have organised panel discussions. The anti-globalisation critics meet in the Teatro della Torsi, the place of the local administration, and other places to discuss the next campaigns and tasks for autumn. Many activists are already focused on mobilising for Riva, where from the 6th to the 9th of September, the European foreign ministers will decide for their strategy for the WTO summit in Cancun, taking place 1 week later."
There will be a counter-congress and a demonstration for which many disobedienti from Italy and Europe have already announced that to take part. Of course, here the main focus will be the campaign to shut down Europe's largest arms fair, Defence Systems Exhibition International, DSEI, with a week of events running from the 6th to the 12th of September.
Meanwhile, back in Ireland, on Monday in Ireland, the Evening Herald newspaper ran with the headline, "Sinister Anarchy Plot for Dublin, dun 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 dun." In the start of what will be no doubt a media orgy of predicted apocalypse-like events in the run-up to the World Economic Forum meeting at Dublin Castle in October, Sounds a bit like the annual May Day hysteria seen in London over the past few years, hey? Who could forget the story that demonstrators armed with samurai swords would apparently use the tube system's ventilation shafts to secretly scurry across London, popping up to launch attacks? We kid you not. The WEF, the World Economic Forum, is a get-together of the world business leaders and politicians and has seen ongoing all to be them smallish demonstrations by anti-globalisation campaigners. From Davos in Switzerland, traditional home of the WEF, as well as Austria, Switzerland, America, indeed anywhere where the World Economic Forum seem to travel. In October, many groups are planning activities from an alternative conference to street blockades of the meeting itself, which will focus on European competitiveness. For more balanced reporting and information, see IndieMedia Ireland, www.indiemedia.ie.
Also in Ireland on Monday, the first autonomous space in Dublin to be squatted and opened since the Garden of Delight Centre closed its doors in late 1996 was evicted. At around 2 p.m, a group of four men showed up claiming to be the owners of the building. Yes. They had sledgehammers and crowbars and attacked the door of the squat. The police ended up supporting their attack and illegally evicting the people inside.
Surprise.
Although it's still over 13 months away, New York City has begun organising in earnest to oppose George Bush's Republican National Convention, the RNC, which will be held in the city from the 30th of August to September the 2nd, 2004. United for Peace and Justice has issued a call for worldwide protests in the spirit of the massive February the 15th anti-war protests to coincide with the opening of the convention. Further into the future, and it seems that the G8 summit for 2005 is scheduled to come to the UK. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about this over the next couple of years.
And now we're going to a track, The New Age Steppers Fade Away.
Hey, what up? Radiolandia.
Radio London.
Okay, so we're back again. We are back again, aren't we? Yeah, we are. Great. Okay, every day people make a political decision whether they realise it or not by the food they consume. Will that food be GM-free, fair trade, organic? Does it matter what we eat and where it came from? Either way, the crunch time for GM crops is approaching and food-related issues seem to be very much on the minds of many people. There are only 2 days left to have your say in the government GM debate. Whether you are against them or support them, you can fill in a questionnaire with 15 questions about your views on GM, the results of which will be given to the organisers of the debate, who will report the findings to the government. To take part, visit www.gmnation.co.uk. I'd just like to add something here, that I went to the GM Nation debate the other day, which they told me at the last minute on Saturday morning was actually happening on Saturday morning. And as a result of this poor advertising campaign by the GM Nation debate, very few people were actually in attendance. There was 30 people representing the whole of London. And as for a debate, there was no debate. People were very clearly against GM. And of course, what the devastating things that are going to happen as a result of GM. If we do allow GM to actually go ahead to be a cash crop in this country, at the moment it's just test trials, but even these trials are contaminating the land around for 12 miles. So please get online and go to www.gmnation.co.uk and vote. You have until Friday. Please, 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 please vote. It's really, really important.
Okay, now, the Greek government has seized the bank account which was opened to receive funds for prisoner solidarity concerning the last EU summit in Thessaloniki, Greece. One UK man, Simon Chapman, who faces up to 25 years in prison after being arrested and charged with possession of explosives, alleged petrol bombs, yet a video shows the petrol bombs being planted on him by the police. So you see, it's quite contentious that the people have been arrested, and we have it that the Greek government have seized the bank accounts. So on Thursday, the 10th of July, solidarity actions took place in London, Brussels, Graz, Athens, Thessaloniki, Mildred, Bibeo, Torino, Rome and Buenos Aires. Sorry, I said
Mildred.
I said Mildred. I meant Madrid. I think I'm having a dyslexic moment. Quickly, move on. A number of people were arrested on Monday evening at a demonstration against the Israeli Prime Minister Sharon, who was visiting Tony Blair. Hundreds gathered opposite Downing Street to show their opposition.
Early morning, on the 10th of July, Earth First and other concerned individuals blockaded Amex office in Warrington for 3 hours,
right,
demanding that they pull out of BP's Baku oil pipeline. Amex has a £200 million contract to build the Georgian part of the pipeline. Protesters mounted a large tripod and a chain of people locked themselves together across the entrance. The action prevented around 250 vehicles from entering the complex, causing deliveries to be cancelled and making company workers climb over locked-on people and a banner proclaiming Stop Baku Pipeline to get to work. After 3 hours and absolutely no action on the part of the three baffled and slightly bored police, the protesters packed up and left, retrieving the materials with no arrests. Meanwhile, on Monday the 14th, Friends of the Earth and Jean Lambert, Green European MEP, presented a section of model pipeline to the Department for International Development. The section of homemade pipeline was covered with over 4,000 letters from members of the public protesting against the Baku-Cheyenne pipeline.
Fair play.
This Saturday, yet another protest is scheduled at US-occupied RAF Fairford. Last week, we reported on the demonstrations there on American Independence Day, where a declaration of independence from the American military was read out. This week, the protest is against the Royal International Air Tattoo. A campaigner said in a statement, "The Royal International Air Tattoo, RIAT, provides Western military powers with the chance to flaunt their power." and an opportunity for arms companies to advertise their wares. B-52 bombers dropped thousands of tons of cluster bombs and radioactive depleted uranium shells with the purpose to massacre Iraqis and destroy their countryside and infrastructure for decades to come. Two of these evil warplanes are back at Fairford so that arms dealers and warmongers can have their pictures taken alongside the bomb carriers and schmooze with their crews. Visitors to this arms fest must understand these weapons of mass destruction are responsible for the death and maiming of tens of thousands of people around the world, and importantly that this mass slaughter has not stopped and will never stop until we say and act no.
Dear, dear. Is that awful, isn't it? Domenico Lopez, a leading depleted uranium expert, is coming to Fairford to speak on the middle Saturday of the Rogue International Arms Traders War, or IAT. Domenico Lopez, a resident from New Mexico, worked from 1993 to 2000 as research director for Revisioning New Mexico, studying money in New Mexico politics, writing legislation and promoting efforts at campaign finance reform in New Mexico. He researched and analyzed election campaign contributions to political candidates. He mobilized grassroots involvement in universal health care legislative efforts. An essential component of his work at Revisioning was the direction he provided to the Environmental Justice Project that focused on depleted uranium issues. He first became involved in depleted uranium research in 1986 when he organized residents in New Mexico to investigate the potential health risks associated with nearby explosive testing of depleted uranium weaponry. In 1993, explosive testing was halted there. Ultimately, the combination of his ongoing and relentless volunteer efforts and work-related responsibilities resulted in an invitation to serve as a consultant in the United Nations Subcommission of Human Rights. Between 12 and 2 on Saturday the 19th of July in 2003, at Fairford Community Centre, he will be talking. The community centre is a building to the south of St Mary's Church, the centre of Fairford. It borders on the graveyard and the public toilets are the other side of it. It is in the main high street just above the marketplace at the Bull Hotel. To get past the air-tattooed traffic people driving from the east, west and north, should head for the village of Queenington and travel south to Fairford from there. Keep an eye out for traffic flow changes closer to the time. There you go, it's very detailed.
Doxis abbiamo, paio dei dolori. Please hang up and try again.
Hello, are we having technical problems? We're trying to speak to two activists in Iraq at the moment. We're trying to speak to Heather and Quiva, who are actually on a hunger strike in Iraq. We've seemed to have lost them, so we're going to go back to some music. And the music you've just been hearing is the Free Mustafas. So, enjoy. Was, as I said, a Free Mustafas. We now have Eva online. Eva's in Iraq. Hi, Eva. How are you doing?
All right, Penny. How are you?
We're fine. I just got a press release in front of me about people going on a hunger strike to alert the world to the Palestinian refugees situation in Iraq. Can you fill us in a bit more about that?
I can, but you know what? I've got Quiva sitting next to me, and she could fill you in just as well. So I'm going to hand you over, and then I'm going to talk a bit about the general situation in Iraq afterwards, if there's time. Fadbeli ya Quiva ya Batala.
Okay.
Hey, Penny, how are you doing?
Hi, Quiva, how's it going?
Hello?
Hello, how's it going?
All right. So you just fitted out everything.
Are you still on the fast there?
We're not, actually. It's been temporarily suspended. We did 4 days of it, and then we were approached by some UN officials who said that basically they thought that there was a very sensitive negotiation process going on with the American Occupation Administration, and anything that was seen as provocative in any way that anything that was seen as vaguely political could upset that process in terms of the negotiations for rehousing. So being sufficiently guilt-tripped, we stopped it, after speaking to people in the camp. But then other people in the camp came back to us and told us that they had heard through different sources that it seemed that the hunger strike and the attention, the press sort of coverage that it received had sufficiently embarrassed and irritated the American administration to the point that they were trying to stop it, or at least stop coverage of it. So with that in mind, we then went back to the camp representatives, and what we've agreed to do is basically like give them a time frame. If this housing, and it's been spoken about for the last 3.5 months without anything materializing, if it does, you know, within the next week, then I think everybody will be celebrating that. If it doesn't, there's talk about the entire camp perhaps going on, you know, a short hunger strike, and then the international's presence going on an indefinite one. And other actions, you know, they're talking about perhaps putting a protest tent outside Bremer's residence and a symbolic demonstration.
So what is the conditions of people in Iraq, the Palestinian refugees in Iraq in particular? Are they worse than the conditions of other Iraqis?
The situation in Iraq in general, you know, is such that, you know, it's sort of difficult to compare the levels of suffering at the moment. Palestinians are in a particularly precarious position because Iraq didn't sign on to the 1951 Geneva Convention protecting the rights of refugees. they were looked after basically, you know, by the regime, and weren't included under the aid provision under the UNRWA mandate, which would apply to other Palestinian diaspora refugees all over the Middle East. And because of that, they were given subsidized housing, some Palestinian refugees from the original Nakba in 1948, but that didn't extend to all Palestinian refugees living here. And again, when we talk about aid provision, it's relative. You know, there were still sometimes 4 to 5 families living, you know, in 2-room apartments. The conditions were very, very bad. That did create some resentment in more impoverished Iraqi communities. And a lot of landlords following the fall of the regime, and this doesn't just apply to Palestinian refugees, there have been thousands of evictions going on all over Iraq, but landlords are upping prices that were basically frozen for a number of years. And there was a wave of Palestinians particularly being evicted. Some landlords whose rents weren't subsidized, or sorry, some buildings of which rents weren't subsidized also sort of rode that wave in terms of doing evictions. The conditions in the camp, though, are very, very bad. The temperature here is above 60 degrees at the moment. There have been 5 miscarriages in the past 3 months, and doctors are saying from the heat, a woman died a few days ago, an elderly woman and her family are saying it, you know, because she was old and ill and couldn't stand the heat as well. It's like an oven, really, inside the tent. People have been living in very cramped conditions as well, you know, listening to promises being made week after week after week after week about resolution in terms of providing secure permanent housing, and that hasn't materialized. Water and electricity supplies, you know, again, are anywhere in Iraq, you know, are very limited, but that's felt even more because of, you know, the heat and because people are living in very exposed conditions. But again, I think, you know, this is testament to the resilience and strength, really, of Palestinian, you know, both diaspora communities, refugees and Palestinians living within occupied Palestine, but have remained very strong, very cohesive and very unified, you know, throughout the last 3 months. And there is quite a bit of local organization going on, and definitely a will there, you know, that if they listen to more empty promises, to take more affirmative action.
Okay, shall we go over to Eva now? So, because Eva was going to come back.
Definitely. I'll pass you on to Eva.
All right. Thanks very much.
Hello.
Hello, Eva. So what were you going to fill us in about the situation in Iraq?
Just in general, like 2 days ago, there was the inauguration of the Security Council, the Governing Council of Iraq, which is made up of about 25 individuals, half of which are actually exiles, so they weren't even here for the past 10 or 20 years, about the worst of the sanctions, genocidal sanctions over a million Iraqis killed by American and British sanctions, banning medicines, essential equipment, banning stuff like sort of turbines, essential things basically that keep the Iraqi economy, civilian infrastructure going. So anyway, this council of mafia, we went to the press conference for it, and I mean, it's very, very sinister. There was absolutely no transparency in process of how this council was chosen, despite one of the members who really sort of adopted a lot of American kind of governmental propaganda, rewriting history, lie, crap, said that this council is the manifestation of the free will of all Iraqi people. And it isn't, you know, most people actually don't even know who's on it, and they're the new government. You know?
So how are people getting elected then? Is there such things as elections in place, or are they just being appointed?
They were just chosen. They were handpicked by the American colonial occupation administration. That was actually a slip of the tongue, but it's true.
Right. Well, listen, thank you very much. We'll try and speak to you again next week and find out a bit more, and good luck with everything in Iraq.
Okay, thanks. And do you know there are attacks on soldiers every single day?
Yeah, we're hearing a lot about that here. We're hearing a lot about people being shot and on a regular basis. So we're going to leave now.
I think it's Drew from Fallujah.
All right, well, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Well, you got to tell Jaja why. It's Kingston 12. It's Kingston 12. It's Kingston 12 now. It's Kingston 12.
Was Trenchtown Rock by Bob Marley and the Wailers, man. Okay.
Now we have a story from India. A struggle against Coca-Cola and the exploitation of scarce underground water resources for its sake is gaining momentum in Shivaganga in Tamil Nadu. On the 28th of April, more than 7,000 people, many of them women, defied a ban to participate in a rally against Sahiti sugar mills at Padamatha, about 20 kilometres from the district headquarters town. The sugar mill has entered into a contract with the transnational soft drink maker to prepare and package some of its products using groundwater resources, 75,000 litres a day, according to the mill authorities. The protesters raised slogans against attempts to appropriate a common natural resource and deprive the local people of access to it. Leaders of the movement explained the implications of the mills deal for the local community with respect to its irrigation and drinking water needs. 1,900 people defied a ban and took part in the most recent rally, which was preceded by a three-month campaign of leafleting, organised meetings, flyposting and street theatre, all designed to create awareness of the potential impact of the bottling units' operations on their water resources, which are already under pressure due to years of drought and sand mining on the riverbeds.
The local community's main fear is that the packaging unit might resort to indiscriminate exploitation of groundwater, exacerbating current water scarcity for drinking and irrigation purposes. It is thought that plans would affect water supply to three towns and about 80 villages covered by the Comprehensive Drinking Water Supply Scheme, whose requirements are currently met from the Vaigai riverbed. Since, during a trial run, toxic waste was released into a canal, killing livestock and damaging the local ecosystem of a village there, there are also concerns that the plant would cause wider serious environmental problems and that these concerns outweigh any possible positive effects of the industry. The demonstrators demanded that the packaging plant be banned, the sugar mill be permitted to draw water only on the basis of its actual average use for purposes that have been permitted for the past 15 years, and that a study group comprising environmental experts, representatives of political parties and agricultural associates be formed to monitor the way the sugar mill uses its bore mills. If you want to find out more about this and other stories such as the one on the Narmada Dam, look at the Indian Indie Media site.
Okay, and now an anti-Bush protest roll up in Cape Town in South Africa. And the IMC Pretoria Cape Town says on the 9th of July, a protest of 10,000 gathered at the Union Buildings of Pretoria today to protest against George W. Bush's visit to South Africa, carrying posters saying, "A village in Texas is missing its idiot," and "George Bush, war criminal." Protesters made it clear they don't see GWB as the saviour of Africa. Bush's agenda in South Africa is partly economic and partly political. On the economic front, Bush's agenda of economic cooperation is the practical face of the common policies of neoliberalism pushed by the American and South African governments. In this vision, the role of the market is emphasised and it amounts to the globalised form of the trickle-down policies of Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher in the 80s. This market delivery means imposing the rule of market with an iron fist, crushing all opposition, both inside the workplace and in poor townships in the process. In South Africa, this has meant years of debilitating workplace struggle and fiery clashes in poor neighbourhoods between the representatives of landlords and poor residents. Key to the political component of Bush's vision is anti-terrorism, which has sprawled the Patriotic Act in the USA and the Anti-Terrorism Bill in South Africa. In this political framework, government surveillance systems are beefed up and laws made more draconian to protect infrastructure, seen as the key for business as usual. As any protest which threatens to put a spanner in the works, it's open to be labelled as terrorist, and any organisation which supports direct action is prone to be labelled a terrorist organisation, with years in jail for supporting or even wearing an insignia or such a group of such a group. My God. This political agenda of repression shows the lie to the description of the market as free. In Cape Town, about 1,500 protesters gathered to tell Parliament that they were not happy with the South African government opening its arms to US warlord George W.W. 3 Bush.
And now we have a story from CJ from the CBGnetwork.org. It's about child labour and exploitations and genetically modified cotton. A new report by Dr. Davuluri Ventakata Svarului, I can't say that actually, Global Research and Consultancy Services reveals that multinational companies are perpetrating the terrible problem of child labour on cottonseed farms in India. It is estimated that nearly 450,000 children in the age group of 6 to 14 years are employed in cottonseed fields in India. Currently, there are about 200 seed companies involved in production and marketing of hybrid cottonseeds in India, including multinational companies like Unilever, Monsanto, Bayer, Syngenta, Advanta, and Emergent Genetics. Multinational companies are operating their seed business activities through their own subsidiary companies in India or joint ventures and collaborations with local Indian companies. Local seed farmers who cultivate hybrid cotton seeds for the big seed companies secure the labour of girls by offering loans to their parents in advance of cultivation, compelling the girls to work at the term set by the employer for the entire season and in practice for several years. These girls work long days and are paid very little and are deprived of education and exposed for long periods to dangerous agricultural chemicals. Companies like Monsanto, Advanta and Bayer claim that they are committed to socially responsible business practices. Unilever, Syngenta and Bayer are also member companies of the Global Compact. Please check the report on the Bayer website, Bayer and the Global Compact. A joint initiative of the United Nations and private business companies started in 2000, aimed at improving the human rights, social standards and environmental protection. But the activities of these MNCs in the area of cottonseed business in India are certainly not in tune with what they claim about their commitment to socially responsible corporate behaviour. Though they are not directly involved in employing children, they have substantial control over seed farmers who actually employ the children for producing seed for these companies. What distinguishes child labour in cottonseed production from other industries which employ child labour is that it involves relatively large numbers and female child labour constitutes a majority of the total workforce. The figure of children working in the cottonseed business surpasses the total number of children employed in industries such as carpet, glass bangles, diamond polishing, gem polishing and limestone put together in India. For the full report, see www.indianet.nl/coteed.html. And the report was commissioned by the India Committee of Netherlands Coalition Against Bear Dangers. Check out www.cbgnetwork.org. And now we have a track from a band called Joan of Arse called Who's the Daddy Now?
Sexual organs, now I want them back.
I'm married to two.
Me too.
Where's your name, doctor?
That's my tutor. That was the one that got stabbed. Stabbed. Stabbed to death. I'm married to
two. I'm married to two.
Your name, doctor, that's my tutor. The one that got stabbed. My daddy's with us.
From Kaliningrad, which is a strange little bit of Russia, not attached to it, but near Poland. On the 12th of July in Zelenogradsk, activists and campaigners with the Eco-Defense Stop D6 campaign sent 484 postcards signed by town residents to President Putin in protest at Lukoil's activities on the D6 oil rig and the continuing Baltic oil project.
Eco-Defense and other NGOs in the region have been working to raise awareness among the local population of the negative impacts of oil extraction and transportation on the local environment and economy.
Hooray.
The environment is internationally recognized as an ecological valuable area, and the local economy is built on tourism, not bothering even with a BP-style greenwash of its activities in the area. Lukoil, which means onion oil apparently, has remained silent about the proceedings, and no non-company observers are allowed access to the oil rig or its environs. The Stop D6 campaign, therefore, is the only group raising awareness of the issues among locals.
3 days after Eco-Defense issued that press release, the beaches in the region were contaminated for 200 kilometres by 40 tonnes of oil refinery byproduct. The authorities have issued no statement, and Lukoil claims the source of the pollution is a Chinese tanker that sunk a year ago or older previously submerged Russian vessels.
Ecologists are doubtful and have taken samples of the pollutant that are being analysed in labs and to ascertain their probable origin. They also note the pollution of Kaliningrad beaches has become noticeably worse over the past 3 years. Coincidentally, Lukoil extraction refining transportation activities were resumed in the area 3 years ago exactly. For regular updates, check www.ecodefense.org. facebook.com/indymedia.
Okay, we're just getting ready to say goodbye, but coming up we have...
Yeah, I went... when I left the studio here the other day, I was cycling down to South Kensington to the pictures of the Earth taken from the air, which is an amazing free exhibition outside the Natural History Museum, worth a check. And on my way, I came across a demonstration which was taking place outside the Iranian embassy. Now, this was part of a demonstration that was happening internationally across the world in support of the 15,000 people who are now imprisoned for demonstrating against the Iranian regime in Iran, which has been taking place since the past 12 years or longer. And I spoke to some people outside the embassy, and here is what they had to say. Is this week there has been, in the past few weeks, there has been 6,000 students arrested for protesting, looking for freedom in Iran. Also, there are people as young as 12 being arrested, and people are just basically families who don't know where their people are, and people are, it's actually illegal to demonstrate in Iran, but people are demonstrating anyway, and people are being beaten up and tortured in prisons, and they had some pretty brutal photographs of stuff that's been going on.
We're just in front of the building of Iranian governments, and we just want to against the Iranian governments. We want freedom. All people that are here, they want freedom, and they want all the students that are in prison in Iran, just get them free.
Why are the students in prison in Iran?
Because they just want freedom. They just want to be free. They just want to have. They just want to say whatever they want to say.
And how many students are in prison?
Around 6,000.
6,000.
At the moment. Yeah.
And is this increasing every day, or is this decreasing?
Yes. They beat them. They hit them. They do everything with them.
Yeah. And why is this happening?
Because of these governments, because they're not giving freedom to the women, to the young people, to the boys and girls to be free, to do whatever they want to do. You know, women in Iran can't do anything they want. You know, they're like...
It's a religion like Islam, which is very strict, doesn't give any freedom to the women. You're going to get nowhere. Everything, every rule in Iran is under the Islamic rule. And that gives us no freedom of speech. We can't write what we want, we can't say what we want, we can't go out in the street and demonstrate. And this is our only chance.
So actually in Iran this would be illegal?
Absolutely. In Iran we'd be beaten up right now.
The last 10 days there has been demonstration more or less every day. And in Iran. And 15,000 people have been arrested, as young as 12 years old. And they've been tortured, they're in jails. The jails are so badly full, they have to sleep on the landing. And the families are standing outside, they beat the families up. The family are just saying, even if you killed our children, just give it back, give our kid back, give the body back to us. So at least we can say they died for democracy. And they're like, no way, you know. And today there's a huge demonstration in Iran as well, all over the world. People are, it's the day that people are getting together to make the rest of the world hear us. Basically.
We're here to show our support of the people in Iran who are demonstrating. Today is major demonstration day. But we don't know what's happening because they've shut down all the TVs, all the communications between here and Iran has been shut down. So they have no idea what we're doing. We have no idea what they're doing.
Here today.
I'm Amir Pershian. Yes. We are against this regime in Tehran, in Iran, actually, as a matter of fact, for years. At least 22 years they took over my country. And so we are really trying our best, really, to just let the world know how much we are suffering, what is happening in my country. They captured the student, they threw them from the top of the building, they killed them, they destroyed them. Nobody has any freedom to say anything in Tehran because of these mullahs, of this Islamic so-called republic.
And so, do you think you're being heard?
Am I
heard? You feel like you're being heard here?
In this country, a lot of people know what we are doing. And in the USA, million of people are out today. All over the world, millions are doing their best to allow the people know about our trouble and our sadness and sorrow and conspiracy of this regime in my country.
So where are you right now?
Where am I? We are in front of the previous embassy of Iran.
And is there, has the Iranian ambassador made any appearance?
No, we don't believe actually there is any ambassador in this country. They are just terrorists in this country, not the, any known government which is voted by the people. It's not voted by people.
Thank you.
We've gathered today in support of, in support of the resistance of people in Iran against the Islamic regime of Iran. We are trying. We want freedom, unconditional freedom, and equality for people of Iran. We want a better life in Iran. We don't want to replace the Islamic regime. Is going. That is for sure. But we want people to overthrow the Islamic regime with their own power. They are going to, and we calling for all civilized people in the world to join us, to support us, and support the people's resistance and revolution in Iran.
When you say the regime is going, what do you mean by that?
That the regime has lost its unity at all. People this time came into the streets, and their first slogan was, down with the Islamic regime of Iran. No one any longer talk about referendum or having a better mullah or a so-called democratic mullah or democratic Islamic regime. They don't want Islamic regime at all. They want, what we want is to have a free and equal society for people of Iran, in conditional freedom of speech, in conditional freedom of organization, and equality of men and women, freedom for women, in one word, freedom for women. You're welcome.
Okay, so that was some of the people very passionately speaking there outside the Iranian embassy the other day. It's worth checking out what is going on in Iran and seeing how you can support them. Obviously, as you heard there, it's impossible for people to actually receive any information about what's going on inside Iran at the moment, but there is ways in which you can support the people of Iran on the outside who are campaigning for freedom and against this crazy regime. You can go to a couple of websites, www.iran1357.org or www.mobarezan.com.
Okay, and that's goodbye from all of us. Yay. Tonight. We'll see you next week. We've had a technically chaotic show.